Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever owned a rescue dog? Tell me, would you like to learn more about the challenge and the rewards of adopting a rescue dog? Have you ever wanted to know more about communicating with your dogs and communicating with other animals? We're talking about how to talk to them and how to hear what they have to say. Can you imagine your dog saving your life and then becoming your spiritual partner in life? Tell me, do you know how things that happen here on earth can bring you closer to heaven? Have you ever heard about a book called A Dog Named Leaf or Angels Animals Network? Or would you like to meet two people who have some of the answers that we're looking for? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today I will be introducing you to two people, my guests. This is the first time on the show, and they are success coaches extraordinaire. They will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons about dogs and animals and some really, really great advice. I am pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk 4 Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio and Blog Talk Radio. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Also, LinkedIn announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed last year. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my two guests. They are best-selling authors of 15 internationally distributed books about the spiritual benefits of pets, and they are co-founders of Angel Animals Network. Their book about animal rescue and his 2013 memoir, A Dog Named Leaf, won the prestigious American Society of Journalists and Authors Outstanding Book Awards. I'm pleased to welcome to the show today Linda and Alan Anderson. Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're doing fine. Hi.
Hello.
Wonderful to have you. Now, since I just spent the weekend reading your fabulous book, A Dog Named Leaf, out of curiosity, I want to know, where is he while you're doing this interview?
He's sitting between us, licking his paw.
Okay. I have a dog who sits on the floor in my studio, too, when I do my shows. And I enjoyed reading about your incorporating him into your family, into your life, once you got him. Before we talk about getting your wonderful rescue dog, let's talk a little bit. Linda, would you share how you and Ellen met each other?
Well, at the time, Alan was a police officer in Atlanta, and I lived in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of had my eye on him because I was recently divorced, and I had two young children, and I had a son, and I kept thinking, you know, I really would like to find kind of a big brother sort of person for my son. And so somebody that could be a great role model. And so Alan said, well, yeah, I'll do that. And so he started coming over to my house, and he would take my son out, and then he'd take my started taking all of us out, and we became the greatest friends. And about maybe 6 months or so later, after this had been going on, our friends would say, you know, I think you two might be a little bit more than just friends. You know, we started staying for dinner, and we would talk. And one night we were talking so long that I forgot to put the kids to bed.
<That was great.
laughs> They were having a great time. And we did eventually become a very wonderful, loving family, and he adopted my two children, and we went on from there.
Oh, we have a lot in common, because my husband adopted my two children, and it's always wonderful, isn't it, to start out a relationship as friends and then gradually take it to the next level. Don't you agree, Linda?
Oh, absolutely, because that friendship lasts forever, and, you know, even when you have ups and downs and maybe you're not as romantic as you used to be, you're still really, really good friends.
That's really important. Now, Alan, did Linda have animals when you met her, or have you always had animals in your life?
Well, Linda had this cat, the most amazing cat at the time, named Muggsy.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like he had to give approval for me to come into her life, but he finally did. And I remember, after we got together, I was thinking, well, Muggsy really does have a unique personality. But, you know, he really won't pay attention to you until he wants something to eat. And at that very moment, he came over and slapped my hand with his paw so hard. He's more complex than just food, I think he was trying to tell me.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I read your book this weekend, and I couldn't put it down. It's an amazing story. You know, did you have other pets before you got Leaf?
Yeah, as a family, we had a golden retriever, and this was in Atlanta, and was the most beautiful, loving dog. And, and we have a yellow lab, and her name was Taylor, and she was also just a gorgeous, gorgeous pup. Loved us as a family, and was looking at me and said, "I adore you." Every time she looked at me, and I could do no wrong. And as much as Linda and I love each other, I don't think she looks at me and says, "You can do no wrong. I adore you." I don't think that's part of the makeup here.
Now, obviously, you went to get Leaf, and you picked him up at an animal rescue after you had lost your dog Taylor. How difficult was that, Linda, to decide when you were ready to have another dog in your life?
It was extremely difficult, except for the fact that we were just like pining. It was so empty after Taylor was gone. And what we said to each other, which is something that you might as well not even bother saying it, but what we said to each other is, "We're just going to go look."
Okay.
Might as well not even bother saying that.
Yeah. Yes, in your book you relate the tale about you went to look and you said, well, we're going to go home and think it over, and ended up going right back to get the dog. So it was kind of, Alan, would you say it was love at first sight?
It was love at first sight, but with a caveat of being a little bit hesitant, because I personally was still having a lot of pain for the loss of Taylor. And Leaf was such an individual and so frantic sometimes, because he's still young, about a year old. He was in the shelter and apparently abandoned. And from what I could tell later, it appeared that he had some abuse issues from where he lived before. We just didn't know, because he was abandoned. There was no history. But I loved him, and I wanted to have that love shared with him, and I wanted him to love me back. But it took some effort for us to really begin to trust each other, especially him trust humans, namely me and Linda.
And you both had trust issues. I suppose all three of you had trust issues. Once you brought him home, how long before things started to calm down? Because when I read in the book about his howling animal rescue dogs have, sometimes they have quite a few issues, don't they?
They really do. And the howling started the first night. It was kind of a shock because we've never had a dog do that to that extent. I mean, he really had quite a howl to him. If you ever wondered if dogs descended from wolves.
Yeah.
we have the proof that night. But I would say, and you know, depending on what you're talking about, the kind of behavior, I would say it was at least 6 months before he was at a level where he just, he wasn't so confused and so frightened all the time. And then probably about a year it took for him to get completely and totally comfortable with us.
That's quite a challenge. 39% of U.S. households own a dog, and I can't imagine life without a dog. Dogs have Twitter accounts and Facebook pages, and the most popular videos on YouTube are with dogs, and my dog just made her debut on YouTube last week. 14 million people have adopted shelter pets. Another 41 million indicated that they're considering doing so. 17 million will bring a pet home in the next year. Those numbers are staggering. Alan, what advice do you have to someone who is going to a shelter and considering about adopting a pet?
Well, our situation was somewhat unique. Very often, probably the great majority of times, when someone goes to a shelter or to a rescue group and adopts a pet, that pet is going to be so appreciative of having a home and that they were chosen and they were going to go home and they're going to do everything possible to please you after they get accustomed to their new environment and all the things that, you know, pets love routine, get into a routine. But that appreciation is lifelong and they're going to have a really, really wonderful experience. Because of Leaf's background, when we adopted him, we had to do extra, a lot of extras, including walking him regularly outside and making sure that he knew where the bathroom was outside.
Sure.
Also, basically helping him sleep through the night. And because he was howling all night, we wouldn't be able to sleep. So often at, you know, midnight or one after I took him out, I would bring him back into my office area and get into my recliner chair and put him on my lap and let him hear my heart. Now, Leaf was frigidy, and he didn't necessarily at that point like to be touched so much, but after a while, he would relax. And then after, I would tell him he was loved, and this is a forever home. No matter what, he was going to stay here, and this is going to be it. He's going to really be treated well, and it's going to be a good home for him. And he would begin to relax and quit fidgeting his body. And then he would start snoring. And when he started snoring, I could snore. And we were so happy snoring together. We could actually get some sleep.
That's adorable. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from two of my sponsors right now. And when we come back with Linda and Ellen Anderson, we're going to talk more about their rescue dog. I'm very curious because our family has just welcomed, our daughter's family has just welcomed an adorable rescue dog into their family. And so this is very important information that we need to share with everyone who is doing this wonderful thing. We'll be right back with Linda and Alan Anderson.
Pam Evans has been married and divorced four times and lived to tell the tale with honesty, humor, and a heartfelt message. Check out Pam's first book, Ring Exchange, Adventures of a Multiple Marrier, where she shares her hard-won lessons about behavior, emotions, relationships, and her marriage partner choices. Learn more about Pam's road less traveled and how she anticipates every day with joy and a sense of gratitude. Visit Pam's website at www.ring-exchange.com. Her book is available on Amazon.com, too. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
Both Pam and Dale will be on the show again this month, and I'm looking forward to having both of them back. Today we have Linda and Ellen Anderson with us and their wonderful book, A Dog Named Leaf. I just finished reading it, and you know, Linda, our daughter, they just got a little rescue pup. He is the cutest thing in the world. However, he really is feisty. He's been on the streets. He's kind of a tough little guy. Is that pretty common for rescue dogs?
You know, if you think about it, if you had to live on the street, you'd probably be pretty tough yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really a survival tactic. And yes, I think it is kind of common for dogs that have been almost semi-feral, where they haven't been living in homes, which was the case with Leaf. He obviously had never lived inside a house.
Uh-huh.
Now, a lot of rescue dogs, though, have been in homes, and they're given up for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people might be moving to a place where they can't take a pet, or someone might have passed away. Or, you know, there's just so many reasons. So it's not automatic that you're going to have a dog that has to adjust to being inside a house and living with a family and being around you, being touched, like Leaf had to go through.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's just a matter of making up your mind and applying yourself. And we can see every day their little dog gets more comfortable with them. You know, it is a big change for a dog to go from the streets to the rescue to a home. It's a pretty traumatic adjustment. Ellen, you call your story a dual journey. You say that the two of you, Leaf and you, came together at exactly the right time to help each other heal. Share with our listeners a little bit about how you both needed each other.
Well, as we both, because of my background as a police officer, 8 years in Atlanta, probably working the worst parts of the town for the majority of those 8 years, I really did not think much of people. I mean, I hate to put it that way in such a general term, but I had a hard time either viewing people as balanced, other than either they're going to be hurting other people or they're going to be victims allowing themselves to be hurt because of the situations they place themselves in without, you know, without making really solid decisions. So I came, and Leaf came together as two individuals, and he really is an individual, who really did not think much of people. And I saw in him a reflection of me, and he probably saw in me a reflection of him, and we had to kind of get past this. We needed to become a better human being, and he needed to become all he could be as a dog. And we both knew that where we were at, in my mind, where we were at was just not a good place. And we started, I started watching him and writing about him and writing notes and journal entries about him. As soon as I got him, seeing him come from a point of total distrust from his past experiences probably, and seeing me look at things a little bit differently because of him, and as he grew more loving and more of a happier view of life type of dog, I saw that I also was going to be moving into seeing things differently and in a more, I guess you would say, loving or spiritual or whatever way you want to call it, in a way that allowed me to live life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both had to develop trust issues, and you write so sweetly about all the time that you spent taking Leaf on walks, both of you, and taking Leaf to the park, which is what we do with our dog. And I find those are just special times. It's a chance for dogs to socialize with other dogs and to play and have fun. Don't you agree?
Well, it certainly is for us. We have we talk about several different parks in the book, and we live in Minneapolis, and there's just some terrific dog parks here along the Mississippi River that we call Dog Heaven. And it's so much fun to watch the dogs just running free and along the river, running into the river and on the sand and playing and chasing. And you know, they get a chance to just be total dogs.
Leaf also loves to climb trees.
I
don't know where this came from, but he goes up on a tree, goes pretty high, and goes out on a limb. And, of course, we're watching him very carefully, and there's sand underneath. So there's not possibility of being injured, but he likes to go up there and just lay on the tree and watch all the people and dogs go by sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It's just fascinating to watch his process of just enjoying his time at the dog park as he goes up on a tall branch, lays there, and enjoys the day.
Well, so many of the pictures of in the book have him on trees or on different kinds of adventures. He's a pretty fearless little guy, isn't he, Alan?
Oh, he certainly is. He really is. He's just delightful. He's shown me more courage in him by watching him and writing about his experiences with the courage he has. He showed me that sometimes you just have to take a chance to get what you want, and I love the fact that he showed me that.
Now, was he your first, Linda, was he the first rescue dog that you adopted, or had you adopted rescue dogs before?
Well, we hadn't had many dogs, so no, I think he was the first what I would call officially rescue dog, although we've had all of our cats have been rescued.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this is a wonderful, wonderful book for anyone who is thinking about getting a rescue dog. It's just an amazing journey. It's an amazing experience for you and your family and the dog. Now, Ellen, let's talk a little bit about what happened with your health issue, that where 6 million people in the United States have an unruptured brain aneurysm, as in 1 in 50, and you were that one, weren't you?
I was that one, and it came as a shock.
Uh-huh.
I was actually, when I learned, when the doctor called my office, I was working in the office, and this was pretty close to current when it comes to working computers and helping clients. I got a call one day from the doctor who did a basic check because of dizzy spells, which I thought was, you know, something that would go away.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Alan, I have something to tell you." And he says, "You have an unruptured brain aneurysm." And of course, you know, being a guy, I would say, "Well, where is it?"
Yeah.
And he said, "In your brain."
Oh dear. Oh, wow.
He described where it was, and I was sort of wondering, what is world? I was thinking, there's some poor guy out there who doesn't know he has a brain aneurysm because he called the wrong person. I was totally in denial.
I bet. Now, how long, Linda, was it between Alan's diagnosis and when he actually went in and had surgery?
I think it was mainly about maybe a month, month and a half, something like that.
Uh-huh.
We had to go through a lot of tests, and then he had some other issues that popped up in between, where he had a blood clot that came as a result of one of the tests that he took. And so that had to be gotten under control before he could even have any surgery. So he had a blood clot that was aimed at his heart and his lungs, and then he had a brain aneurysm. So he had two life-threatening situations going on simultaneously. It was a pretty scary time.
Oh, my husband recently had a filter put in for the same blood clot issue, and it is terrifying. So once you had the filter put in, then how long till the actual brain surgery, Alan?
Well, once that was taken care of, it was really a meat. Probably the original date was kept in place, which was a week, maybe 2 weeks after that happened, because now they were able to do it without concern over the blood clot.
I
wanted to share one thing. This is a husband-wife thing as a writing team.
Mm-hmm.
The moment I found out about this, I had a very bad reaction because I saw people with brain damage and how they suffered, and my father, you know, had a terrible stroke at a young age, and it was all very much too much for me to handle, especially the idea of having people take care of you instead of being independent. And I was thinking, well, if I had this reaction, I wonder how Linda would react. And I just automatically assumed she would fall apart and that she'd cry, and I hate it when she cries. So I had to do something to gently enter this realm that now I had to deal with. So I went to the Internet and did a lot of research. I put in a beautiful one-pager all the facts, but I toned it all down to surgical procedure, possibly to, you know, I didn't put any of the bad stuff, only the success stories, because on the Internet, when you search for something, everything's bad.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So I went home that night and handed her this beautiful one-sheet fact sheet about what was going on and what the options were. All very logical, all very reasonable.
Unemotional.
And, you know, we shouldn't, you know, we really don't want to say that sometimes men are not that bright, but sometimes men aren't that bright. So I handed her the sheet, and she looked at me, and I want to quote what she says. She told me, she says, you have an unruptured brain aneurysm, you're going to have brain surgery, and you gave me a memo?
Very good, Linda. I think most women would react the same way.
So this is how I found out my husband had a brain aneurysm. Give me a memo.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the dynamics of marriage. I don't know. How long have you two been together?
We've been married for 30 years.
30 years, yeah. Well, there's no question about it. Men do things differently than women. But once you, and sometimes better and sometimes not so better. So once you got past the memo issue, did the two of you, I would imagine you would have just clung to each other and tried to keep each other from falling apart.
That's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I held her hand. I did the right thing after the memo, and I began to question my thinking process of the memo. But I thought it was a great document. But I did hold her hand, and we sat there. Leif, of course, was with us, and he sat there, looked at us. He knew there was something going on that was big, it was okay. I mean, we talked about our plans, and of course, we were doing right in the middle of all the interviews for our rescued book that we just had just been released, and it was just like we had so much to do.
The timing's never good on these things. You know, speaking of timing, we're going to take a break and hear from two of my other sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what it was like with Leif and Alan bonding and helping each other and Linda through this traumatic situation. And also I want to talk about the people who believe that heaven exists. And Alan, you had a fantastic dream I want you to share with my listeners. We'll be right back with Linda and Alan Anderson.
Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One door closes. Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams, the new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredimski, captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Welcome back with three priceless personalities. We have Linda Allen and Leif Anderson visiting with us today. He's sitting on the couch in between them. Did you know that 9 out of 10 people believe that heaven exists and that several million people in the United States have had near-death experiences? They're called NDEs. Alan, let's talk a little bit about the dream that you had prior to your surgery about the building of life.
Oh yes, I of course I was looking towards the surgery, the blood clot, everything else was happening, and I was thinking about it all the time. And I went to sleep, and I was, you know, through the night into a dream that seemed as real as you and I talking right now. It was a dream where I was standing there, and I was looking at this massive structure. It was sort of organic, and it was just massive. And there was a line of people, a long line, maybe 10 deep, all moving into the building very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, what is all this about? And I overheard, and I understood that this was the building of life. It contained all the libraries, all the relationships, all the experiences, oceans, buildings, forests, everything that was life was in this building.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people that were in line were rushing into it, including Linda and our friends and people I have known, people I have only just met, other people I didn't know. Everyone was going into this building, and they all had a piece of paper in their hand, a ticket.
Uh-huh.
And I looked down at my hand, and it was empty. And there was no way I could find a way of getting a ticket. So I rushed into the line thinking people would just ignore me, but they didn't. They told me that you don't belong here. You don't have a ticket. You can't be with us. You're not one of us anymore. And they were, you know, kind of grumpy about it. I had to leave the line. And I looked at Linda as she moved into the building, and no one ever looked back at me. I was simply alone, as if I had never existed. I was devastated.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up, and I was just totally devastated by this. And I didn't know what to do. I was, you know, it's obvious that I was having a nightmare. I was thrashing about a little bit. Lee came over to my side of the bed and popped his head up, and he was so sweet. You know, he actually was calm, and I was petting him, and he was there to help me. And he was doing a really good job. I was calming down. So we got up, and then later in the morning, I was telling Linda about the dream. She was sitting, and we were having our coffee, and we were just talking, and I was had the courage to tell her about the dream. And I held my hand up, and I said, everyone had a ticket except me. It was I didn't have that ticket in my hand. And her face turned white, because we both look at dreams seriously, and, you know, we often pay attention to them for different decisions we might be making or directions we might be going, and we take them seriously. So she, you know, sat there, and we just thought about it, and there was literally very little we could do. And I just said, well, I woke up and Leaf was there, and he gave me comfort. Well, later on that day, later on that morning, Leaf was sitting there listening to every word, looking at me, looked at my hand, my empty hand. Later on that morning, he did something he had never done before. He went over to the coffee table and with his paw pushed over off of newspaper and magazines onto the floor. And he began tearing these pieces of paper into little slivers of paper. He began using his mouth and ripping them up, and he would gather them up in his mouth, and he would bring them over to me. And he wanted me to get that paper. I ignored him, thinking, oh, just one more issue we have to deal with. You have to try not to do that.
Another problem. At
the floor, and Linda was looking at him. He's never done that before. We rushed back and got some more paper that he ripped up and brought him over to me, wanting me to take the paper from his mouth. And finally, I picked up all the newspapers and magazines and put them up higher so they wouldn't be on the floor anymore. But I can imagine that you know exactly what he's trying to do.
Yes. Share that with my listeners, how it resolved and how him bringing his papers, which actually turned out to be your ticket to you. When did you realize what was really going on?
Well, at the time, I thought my subconscious was trying to tell me something that I didn't want to face in a conscious way, that maybe things weren't going to turn out okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had that in the back of my mind throughout. And so did Linda. She was very panicked. She didn't know what was going to be happening. And we both just didn't know what might be the next step. So as I was going into surgery, and I was put into surgery table, they have these masks that come down to cover your face and put you to sleep for the surgery. And as it was coming down, in my mind's eye, I saw Lee's face, and he still had paper in his mouth. And in that two or three, very, very short period of time, he dropped it, and I reached out inwardly in the mind and touched the piece of paper, and I knew that that was my ticket to life.
to chicken.
And I began to relax. And I began to know that everything was, in fact, going to turn out. Okay. He brought me my ticket to life, and that's what he was trying to do all the time. But on the inside, and sometimes, you know, we really do know in our hearts that as spiritual beings or as soul, we do connect in ways that maybe we often don't realize because of our busy lives and all the responsibilities. And I believe in my heart that was a special gift, and mm-hmm. Leaf was there for me to help me relax and go into surgery, knowing full well that all was going to be fine.
Oh, that story is just a fantastic story, and it kind of is something that I think a lot of our listeners can relate to, that so many times when you look at your dog with their unconditional love, their unconditional eyes, so many times they have a message for you, and it's always a message just like Leaf of love and caring and all the things that make life worth living. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from some sponsors. And Linda, when we come back, I know you've written all these wonderful books on animals, your 15 books. I would like to, when we come back, talk with you a little bit about communicating with animals and the process that people can go through to get closer to their animals. We'll be right back with Linda and Alan Anderson.
Nicholas Hazel is a senior member of the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and author of Laughter, the Drug of Choice. Scientific research is discovering that our bodies only hurt when we don't laugh. For anyone interested in a laugh-out-loud collection of medical terms and poetical music, often at the expense of health professionals' love and life, Laughter, the Drug of Choice, is just what the doctor ordered. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play in well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with Alan and Linda Anderson, the authors of A Dog Named Leaf, The Hero from Heaven Who Saved My Life, and 14 other books. Linda, could you share with our listeners their website information and tell them how they can get your books and how they can join Angel Animal Network?
Well, you just go to www.angelanimals.net. That's a plural, animals with an S. .net, and you can get our Angel Animal Story of the Week. You can sign up for that there. That's a free newsletter that goes out to thousands of people around the world, and people send in their stories, and we publish them, and it's just a tremendously uplifting newsletter. And then also you'll be able to read about all of our books and click through to see which ones you're interested in. So it's really a very alive and vibrant website, and we even have a course on writing for pets, writing about your own pets.
And oh, okay.
A lot about that on the website.
Okay, and are your books available at Amazon too?
They're available at Amazon and bookstores around the country, U.S., Canada.
Countries.
They're translated into a number of foreign languages. And
oh, fantastic.
So you might want to check Amazon in whatever your location is because they might be carrying it in whatever country you live in.
Now tell me, did you ever in your wildest dreams imagine that you would be writing all these wonderful books with your husband?
No.
No, no, no.
Well, it's not an emphatic no, but it was not exactly something that I had envisioned when we first got together and we were trying to figure out how to raise these two children and how to adjust to each other and all those things you go through when you're newly married. But after we moved up here to Minneapolis and our children were grown, then we started to kind of filling our empty nest with pets. And we were in our, you know, midlife looking at, well, what are we going to do next kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
right.
One, the thing that was most important to us was, and we said, this is our mission, we want to bring more love into the world.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's what we want to be able to go out on that note, that they brought more love into the world.
Well, you certainly are doing a fantastic job because just reading your book this weekend just really changed my life. I shared it with my husband, and we talked about communicating with our dog. Now, could you give us some tips about how to communicate better? Because you actually have had, like, what are they, dog whisperers or people who can tell you what your dog is thinking? Share that with me.
Well, we did have a couple of people that worked with us and with Leaf telepathically communicating with him. We just couldn't quite figure out what was going on with him. And there's people that are, they study it, they learn it. Some of them are just have that innate talent or ability to be able to tell what dogs are trying to say to you. And then eventually we were just kind of starting to trust ourselves a bit more, which is probably where most people are. And the main thing that I learned was that just assume that your pet is communicating with you. I mean, just making that assumption, you start looking at things a little differently, and you begin to see things that the pet is doing where he's not using language, but he's in his own way, just like with the ticket and tearing up the little pieces of paper.
Right.
He's trying to tell you something.
Oh, yeah. You know, you have so many wonderful examples in your book of Leaf doing something and you were actually talking to him and explaining things to him. And that has been just such an inspiration for us, because all of a sudden we realize that our dog knows exactly what's going on, and we really have to share more with her and our feelings. And it's kind of a breakthrough book for us, because it's hard to accept that, you know, the dogs, they can't talk, so they can't tell you. So that's a little bit frustrating, isn't it?
It is, but if you watch their actions, you'll see, like, I think I talked about, we talked about this in the book, that in our backyard, there were these really big crows, and we had offended them by having a little baby rabbit that they were going to have for dinner. And when we got Leaf, I started noticing that the crows were really just cawing very, very loud and kind of hovering around when he went out to the backyard. So I had a talk with him, and I talked with him just like you talk to a child. And I just said, before you ever go in the backyard, always look up in the trees and see if the crows are there. And I'm telling you, that's what he's always done ever since. He stands on the deck, and he looks out up in the trees, and he sees whether there's any crows around, and then he goes out because he knows he'll be all right. So
It's amazing.
Interesting,
Yeah, you know, today we asked our dog to go get one of her toys that was in another room, and we said, go get your baby toy. And she just jumped right up and went and got it and brought it to us. And we looked at each other and we said, oh, my gosh.
It really works.
I said, Ellen and Linda would be proud of us. Ellen, I love the story. Could you briefly share the cute story about when you and Leaf went to the dog park and the bulldog Ethel showed up?
Oh, he just fell in love with her. He was still outside of the fence of the dog park, and he just looked at her, and he just turned completely into, I'm in love. And he ran to the fence, and he wiggled, and he wagged, and he did everything he could to get her attention. And she looked over, and he did his haunches, and he did all the things that, a dog, especially a young dog, would do to get another dog's attention that he really, really wanted to play with. Well, she finally decided, and of course, she was in charge. It's a bulldog, and it's obviously the lady
right.
The dog was, of course, the dogs are always in charge. So she went back to the gate, and they both came in, and she says, well, you know, you'd never like to come in here, but she wanted to come in and play with Leaf. Mm-hmm. So Leaf brought her a stick, and they were chasing each other very slowly, kind of like a couple of turtles, because he didn't want to go too fast with the bulldogs. And, you know, other people were watching, too, and they were just so amazed. It's kind of sweet to see two, you know, dogs kind of really get along and like each other. But at one point, Leaf gave her the stick and then kind of moved it away when she tried to get it, and she's probably not a dog that doesn't normally get what she wants immediately. So she had enough playing with him and went to the lady, and they started going out the gate. But she was having a hard time doing the latch at the gate for the dog park. And Leaf walked over there, and I was shocked. He actually put his mouth on the leash because it was loose in her hand and pulled it down and brought the Ethel back into the park. People were laughing. And the lady was just beside herself, and she went back and followed them and got the leash back. Oh, no, no, no. And here we go now. But Leaf had an individual determination to play with the dog, and he won her over. She came in. They played, and they had some fun. And he just wasn't ready for her to leave, and he was going to do what he could to keep her there. But it was just one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Well, I think it's one of the sweetest stories I've ever read, and I look forward to reading all of your books. And I also want to share with my listeners that you need to go to Angel Animal Network, angelanimal.net, and look at these books, because some of these books would be fantastic books to give as gifts, especially if you have friends who have lost a dog. There's several books about saying goodbye to your angel animals and animals and the kids who love them. These are all wonderful books. These are books that you can share with your family and friends. Alan and Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I intend to read all your books, and I hope you will come back again.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
To my wonderful listeners, hasn't this been a fantastic show, especially if you're a dog lover like all of us? My upcoming guests are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and astonish you. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. I'd love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope we can encourage all of you to emulate our guests. Remember my mantra. If you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots of chocolate, and then start petting your dog. Again, thank you to my wonderful guests, Linda and Alan Anderson. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.